Charlotte Talks is sponsored by Mazda of South Charlotte, committed to bridging the gap between adventure and adventurer by helping people select vehicles that fit one's lifestyle. More at MazdaofSouthCharlotte.com. This is Charlotte Talks. I'm Mike Collins. Charlotte Mayor Vi Lyles has been on this program just about every month since taking office, and she was scheduled to be with us this hour. Trouble is, she was overscheduled, and she can't be here today. Fortunately, we were able to call in a pinch hitter, Mayor Pro Tem Julie Iseult. Welcome back.
Thank you, Mike.
Good to see you again. People can join our conversation. Listeners can join our conversation by emailing us at charlottetalks@wfae.org. You can search us. You can search for us on Facebook, get to us through Twitter at Charlotte Talks, and you can watch Julie on Facebook Live this morning. Now, let's start with the CIAA. We knew the tournament was probably not going to come back after their contract expires in 2020. They were shopping it around. They made no secret of that. Cities, including our own, bid on the tournament, but they chose Baltimore, Maryland. It was announced this week. They won it. City Council found out about this just before you were to convene your meeting on Monday night. Did that decision surprise you? Why were you surprised? They didn't give you a heads up, nothing?
Well, it didn't take everyone by surprise. I mean, this is a tournament that has been here, had for 15 years, and there's no other college tournament that doesn't rotate cities. It had rotated. It had been in Raleigh. Raleigh lost it. We were excited to get it. So If I were the board or if I were a fan for the CIAA, I'd say, hey, what about my city? You know, there's 13 schools in the league. You've had it 15 years. So it's not a total surprise, nor should it be.
But this leaked, evidently, before they were going to make their announcement the next day, and somehow it leaked out just before your meeting. Would they normally have given you a phone call to say, sorry, but we're going to
Probably.
Baltimore?
Yeah.
Just didn't have an opportunity to.
They might
it.
Have. I don't know. they didn't call me.
So the impact of this is big. In fact, the Observer calls it massive. Would you agree with that characterization?
It's big from an economic impact standpoint on the hotels, on the restaurants.
$50.5 million.
Yeah, it is big. But I'd like to think that we are a city that will attract other conventions. If we're putting all of our eggs in one basket with a convention or with a tournament like this, then that's not a good thing if we are looking at ourselves as a convention city. We're not Miami, New Orleans. We're not a vacation destination city. So we have to really look at this and say, what else do we have coming? There are other events coming that are exciting, so I would hope that our prosperity doesn't rise and fall on one tournament.
But this is the biggest event. It has been the biggest event every year for 15 years in terms of economic impact at $50.5 million. And it's also an example of how incentives work, because although that $50 million doesn't go to the city, it goes to restaurants and hotels and Lyft and Uber and taxi companies, et cetera. The city did give up some money to attract it in the first place and keep it here. What did it cost us to act as the host city?
It costs about $2 million, and that comes out of the revenue from the motel tax. So, yes, any city has to put up something that's scholarship money. It's facility money that we put up front. So it does cost us something, and it is a huge loss. But I'd like to think that we'll be in a position to bid for it 3 years from now.
We put $16.8 million into scholarships over the course of the time that the tournament has been here. But you're saying that this really doesn't cost taxpayers money because it comes from the hotel motel tax,
Correct.
Not from the property tax or anything like that.
That's right.
So these are incentives that we don't feel, but that pump money into the economy.
Right.
When they moved the tournament to Charlotte years ago, the Central Intercollegiate Athletic Association, which is their official name, also moved their headquarters here. And the headquarters, at least for the time being, will remain in Charlotte. But they're going to move the games to Baltimore from 2021 through 2023. Attendance, and we've talked about this on this program with the CIAA, attendance here has been on the decline. They actually had to rope off seats in the arena downtown the last time because they didn't want to show empty seats. But you think that it's because after 15 years, people, and I guess college fans linger long after graduation, but still the bulk of them are in that four-year window, that after 4 years, 5 years, 6 years, 7 years of coming to the same place at the same time of year, you just get tired of it.
I think that's really what it's about. There's been a lot of talk about other things, but at the end of the day, the fan base, that was the number two reason when CIAA does their survey, the number two request from the fans was move it around a little bit. Let's have it in other cities.
Because, you know, downtown Charlotte has changed a lot in 15 years, but not year to year.
Every single year. Right. Coming to the same city.
So on WFAE, CIAA board chair James Anderson said that price gouging at Charlotte hotels had become an issue. We talked about this a year or so ago, and he talked about it recently with one of our reporters. We did have that instance of the CIAA surcharge on bar bills at the Ritz. Were other hotels and motels and restaurants involved in that? Did they charge a premium because the tournament was in town?
To my recollection, the Ritz was the only one that
So when he says price gouging at hotels, he's really talking about the Ritz?
Well, that's the only incident I remember being reported. Okay. I don't recall that any other hotels were discovered to have been doing that.
Does the Ritz or any other hotels change their prices during other types of events and conventions that come to town? I mean, if we held a Super Bowl here, which we hope to do someday, will there be a Super Bowl surcharge on things?
Well, and that's their food and beverage. So the hotels actually lower their – they negotiate a rate for the CIAA. So – our bid, I believe, was that the hotels were 5% below what they usually charge. So
they make it up at the bar.
Well, I don't know. You're going to have to ask them. It certainly isn't a contractual practice.
So in announcing their decision, CIAA Commissioner Jackie McWilliams, who's also been on this program, said, "This is an exciting time for the CIAA." This is a quote. "As we have an opportunity to bring the basketball tournament to a new market, moving it closer to many of our northern institutions who have traveled to Charlotte for more than a decade." So now they'll be closer. These northern schools will be closer. I don't know where those northern schools are, but they'll be closer to Baltimore because that's where it's going to be. But nine of these conferences, of these schools in this 13-member conference are in North Carolina. So do you think this is really just a temporary move to throw a bone to some folks in the northern stretches of their conference and let them have Baltimore for a couple of years and then come home?
You know, I think it's really about increasing their fan base. And a lot of the folks that come down to Charlotte that have come down here aren't even going to the game. So they've got to get people into the game. Mm-hmm. And I think that's, you know, part of that for them, their decision is when you look at the NFL going to Mexico or Toronto, they're just trying to increase their fan base. It's not because the fans in the United States aren't interested, although it's been on the decline, but this is a business
decision.
That's
why the NFL takes the games to London once or twice a year.
Yeah, to increase the fan base. And so they've got to do that because the fan base has not been on the rise, and so they've got to make a business decision, which is what they did. I think that we need to look at it to say, we're really lucky we've had it for 15 years. It's highly unusual, and we should be starting to talk about our bid 3 years from now.
Okay. Baltimore offered them rent-free use of their Royal Farms Arena. Did they pay for the arena here? Do you know? You may not know.
I think the city put some money towards, you know, because they have to close it, which I don't think any of those cities had a facility the size of Spectrum Arena. Okay. So I don't know how big Baltimore's facility is, but it wasn't the size of Spectrum.
So they're coming in at, that's a $700,000 value, according to Baltimore, and they'll also contribute $1.5 million in scholarships for member institutions in the CIAA. Our bid was described as aggressive, though Councilmember James Mitchell called it, and I quote here, I'm going to stress that I'm quoting James Mitchell, a piss-poor bid. Do you know what that bid included? What did our bid have in it?
To my knowledge, our bid had the scholarship offer. They wanted it increased, and we kept it the same. I can't speak to his comments. Mm-hmm. I don't believe that the council as a whole felt that way. We felt that it was a good bid, but we always knew that there was talk that the CIAA wanted to try it in other markets because their fan base was saying that.
The CIAA board chair said that Baltimore shared a vision of how the CIAA basketball tournament could be woven into the fabric of the city. We've had some tensions surrounding the CIAA tournament, not just the price gouging, but there have been incidents of violence that were not directly connected in any way to the tournament,
right,
except there were people who were in town who took it upon themselves to cause some trouble, and they did. Mm-hmm. With or without those incidents, is Charlotte the kind of city that can weave into its fabric a basketball tournament? Not just their tournament, any tournament. Aside from Speed Week and perhaps the Super Bowl, are we the kind of city that weaves you into our fabric for the time that you're visiting
it? Absolutely.
Really?
We had it woven in for 15 years. That's why they stayed. So, you know, again, I don't read that much into it.
Okay.
I think that we have shown that we're a great place to have a conference, a tournament. We're a great place to have a convention. That is our brand. And so, you know, with sports, we look at the sports tournaments, the college football. We've gotten some NCAA tournaments, you know, not the big dance, but
right,
others leading up to it. And I think that we're a great city for that because you can stay downtown, you can in uptown, you can stay right there. The facilities are right there. People are excited about it. So,
how does this compare to what we think the Republican convention will bring in, this $50.5 million?
Oh, probably less than half.
Really?
Yeah. I mean, it's over $100 million what these national political conventions bring in. So, you know, we've got the All-Star Game.
So that'll make up for it in 2 years.
As will the All-Star Game. I think there's a couple other conventions that are getting ready to be announced. So, you know, we need to look at this as being a diversified,
sure,
convention city.
But how will we replace that money? And year to year, $50.5 million is nothing to sneeze at, particularly, mm-hmm, if you operate a hotel or a restaurant. I mean, that's a lot of money coming,
right,
in that week.
Well, we've got the convention center. So that's, we still have it for 2 more years. So they've got a couple years to plan for that. We've got the convention center expansion that's coming. That's going to make a big difference because a lot of conferences have not been able, and conventions have not been able to work with our outdated model on our convention center. And so when that remodeling is done, that's going to be, and that's right around, I believe, the time of the convention, the Republican convention. We've got more hotels coming online. I think things are just getting better and more attractive.
So when you say they will have to figure this out, you're talking about CRVA, the Charlotte Regional Visitors, whatever it's called.
CRVA?
Yeah.
For
to figure out how to replace that revenue?
Right.
It's their job to do that.
That's their job,
and will,
yes.
Will they have to do it with a bunch of smaller events, or can they capture a big fish that will bring in $50.5 million?
I think that's their job. So I sure hope they can.
How important,
I believe they can.
How important in the scheme of things is replacing that amount of money?
It's dollars. I mean, you know, when we lost conventions and events because of HB2, that hits the pockets of everyday people in the service industry. So that, you know, we have been mindful of that the whole time.
Mm-hmm.
The Republican convention was a convention that means a lot to the people in the service industry, to party planners, to caterers, to florists, to hourly workers. And so that's what's most important, is finding it, whether it's a big or small convention.
City Councilman Justin Harlow, we only have 30 seconds left,
okay,
says the CRVA will need to study why Charlotte couldn't keep the tournament. Because we also failed to track Amazon and a couple of other big economic plums last year. Are we doing something wrong, or is this, do you really think this is just, they want a change?
I've been saying with the Amazon situation, it's not about Amazon for me, but I want to know why we lost Amazon. And we still haven't been given a good debriefing on looking at the reasons why we don't have Amazon. I think it helps the CRVA, it helps the city council, it helps the service industry to know that.
Okay, we'll come back and talk about Amazon then, and e-scooters and the Cross Charlotte Trail, among other things. It's Charlotte Talks on WFAE. Charlotte Talks is sponsored by Mazda of South Charlotte, committed to drivers that believe a car is used for more than just getting from place to place. More at MazdaofSouthCharlotte.com. It's Charlotte Talks on listener-funded 90.7 WFAE and 90.3 WFHE. I'm Mike Collins. This is the day for our monthly conversation with Charlotte Mayor Vi Lyles, but she was overscheduled, and so we have with us the mayor pro tem of the city, Julie Iselton. I just want to set your mind at ease here. You feel free to answer any question I ask you speaking for the city and for the mayor, because City of Charlotte Code Section 3.24B states, in the absence or incapacity of the mayor, all his, they need to update this, all his duties, powers, and obligations shall be vested in the mayor pro tem. So there you go.
In England, they call that the heir and the spare.
So you mentioned, I wasn't going to talk about Amazon, but you mentioned Amazon and the fact that we really haven't, we being council and city government, not being really given a reason for why we lost Amazon to New York and the suburbs of Washington and Crystal City in Virginia. Some say we dodged a bullet by not getting it, but we'll see how it works out up there. Do you know what was in our proposal? Have you ever seen our proposal? You still don't know?
I still have not seen it.
Why?
I don't know.
Because it's not a city proposal. They didn't make the proposal. It was the Charlotte Center City. It was the Chamber and the Regional
Partnership.
So since the city wasn't involved, do you have a right to see it?
I think so. And what it boils down to is, I'm not sure having a right to see it is what's important. It's kind of like if you go on a job interview, you don't get the job. It's one thing to say, bad talk the employer. It's another thing to say, hey, tell me what I did wrong so I can do better next time.
Yeah.
And I think that's the approach we have to take is, what didn't we do right? Amazon apparently gave lengthy debriefings to some cities and 20-minute debriefings to others. I think we got the shorter version. And I'd like to know why.
Well, given the cities they chose, we're in a different league. You think? We're not New York.
So
never
we can
will
speculate.
Be. We're not the D.C. suburbs.
Right. We can speculate. And it's kind of obvious that they were looking for that tech talent. But I still want to know. I think that...
Well, they stress transportation. Everybody knows that the city of New York has probably the most amazing subway system, although it's in bad repair.
It's going to be shut for a while.
It goes everywhere. And Crystal City, Virginia is right on the metro line. It's 2 seconds from the airport. The metro goes all over the Washington metropolitan area. It's not just one train going in two different directions. It goes everywhere.
Right.
So don't you think can we compete with something like that?
That's the will of the people. So when I'm looking at this issue now with transportation and planning. So when we look at our bus routes, it's a chicken and the egg, right? Nobody rides the bus, people say, because they don't come frequently enough. Well, we can't go buy buses and put more routes out there unless people ride the bus.
Right.
The only city in this country that's really bucked the trend and has higher bus and mass transit ridership is Seattle. Mm-hmm. And they just passed a $52 billion bond a couple years ago for mass transit. $52 billion.
Billion.
That's
a city.
What we said. We were out there with their council and we said, I'm sorry, was that a B? It's just stunning. And it's
where's that money coming from? Of course, Seattle already Seattle has they have Amazon, they got Microsoft, they're the whole tech center of the country outside of California.
Chose not to. It's not one of my kids lives out there, and they're not the favorite company of the residents of Seattle.
Yeah.
They buy bus stops from the public transit system, so now your bus stop's gone, and it's for a Google or Microsoft or Amazon employee. Seattle makes it hard to drive. It's expensive to park anywhere, even on street parking. They make it difficult to get in your car.
And deliberately?
Because they want to push
Don't
people.
Get any ideas. Oh, you're
what
smiling
else would
at
you
me.
Like to know?
So where does the money come from? What is it, $50 billion?
It's a regional tax.
But
they got ranchers.
In what form?
They got ranch property tax.
Okay.
People on the other side of the mountain that probably don't ever get on light rail agreed. So, like Denver, it took them 10 years. It probably took Seattle that long to get people to agree to it as to why that's good.
So when I said don't get any ideas, you were very quiet with a big smile on your face. You've already gotten the ideas.
No. But we have to look at the whole ecosystem. Cars are, it's cheap to drive these days, so we have to be realistic about that. People aren't going to get out of their cars unless it's really painful to do so.
Yes, but to get out of your car, we're going back to the chicken and egg thing.
Yeah.
If you want people to get out of their cars, you have to give them alternatives.
Exactly, right. And so it is a chicken and the egg. You have to invest in it first. But we do have some corridors that I think we could start with where it's painful. I don't care what kind of car you have or how many cars you have. It's painful. coming up Providence Road in the morning or going out Providence Road, Central Avenue.
77.
Right. And so, well, let's leave that alone because that's the states, but with okay. roads All that, right. although so is Providence. But looking at those roads and saying, let's take one of the lanes just during rush hour and close it off for bus rapid transit, for a dedicated bus lane to go in and out of the city. You know, let's do that. Let's run a pilot and see how that works. I think there's ideas that...
Do you guys want to be reelected?
Well, wouldn't, you know, I mean, people in Ballantyne are frustrated that it takes them so long to get into Uptown for work.
Okay.
I mean, I'm not saying we shouldn't do it without public input. I'd love the public suggestions on what... We had a guy come to council 2 years ago, an older gentleman, with a little piece of paper that he held up and he had drawn... an idea like that on the piece of paper, and everybody went, well, that's interesting. But let's follow up on it, see what the public thinks about it and if there's the demand.
Okay. Well, speaking of transportation alternatives, let's talk about e-scooters, because last year the city...
We haven't yet.
Haven't what? Have talked
about nobody's talked about e-scooters yet.
Of course not, no. But last year the city decided to allow some more scooters on the street. I think they put them on the street, and then you allowed them to put them on the street, because I think they beat you to the punch, if I recall correctly. Yeah, but and you decided to wait on regulating scooters until the legislature came up with their own regulations, because this is happening, this phenomenon is happening in several cities around North Carolina, and why put regulations in only to have them changed or overturned by the state? But now council is debating, and you will debate, I believe, on Monday, mm-hmm. whether to go ahead and beat the legislature to the punch. Why the change of heart?
Well, the legislature kind of indicated that they're not, they've decided not to regulate vehicles. They regulate motor vehicles, and vehicles are defined as the scooters, the e-bikes, not the four-wheel motor vehicles like an automobile. So other cities have already done it. We feel that it's imperative that we put some rules in place. There's certainly, we can talk to the legislature about it. One of the things that I have a concern about is...
Yeah, but before, last year, before Christmas, you decided
staff,
that...
Staff said
decided.
That.
So the council is overruling staff.
Council has encouraged the staff to move forward with putting some rules in place.
Why?
Because we feel that it's imperative to the safety of pedestrians.
Because Braxton
as well.
Winston was expressed a little concern last year about over-regulating these things.
Right.
You'll kill the whole idea if you
right.
if you put too much regulation on it. Has he changed his mind?
You'd have to ask him about that.
Okay.
But the point is that any cities have either banned scooters or allowed scooters with rules. And the scooters that the rules that we're proposing. There are other cities. Denver has almost the exact same game plan.
Okay.
So we're talking to other cities that have said that agree scooters are good. They are especially we have found that people, the highest income users are people earning $25,000 and below. So we know that it's an equitable option for transportation, but it shouldn't. It's an option. It's a tool. It's another choice. Pedestrians are also very important. And they have rights, too.
So what regulations are you looking at, considering?
So we're considering capping the speed limit, the motorized speed limit, at 15 miles an hour. And I say motorized because the e-bikes, you have to pedal to get the motor going. And you could go over 15 miles an hour if you're pedaling enough. But the motorized cap would be at 15.
Plus, you wouldn't be on the sidewalk with a motorized bicycle, would you?
Well, in some places you can. We're talking about a corridor here in Uptown that that would not allow them on the sidewalk.
Mm-hmm.
We recognize the reason we allow bicycles on sidewalks is we recognize that we don't have complete streets with regards to our sidewalks. We're just not there yet, and it's going to be a while. So we have thousands of miles of roadway that needs sidewalks.
Right.
And so in some places you will be allowed, especially if the speed limit's over 35 miles an hour, you can use the sidewalk or a bike.
So when you say limiting the scooters to 15 miles per hour, that's a software adjustment in the scooter itself, not because there's no speedometer on the thing. So if you're full throttling it, you don't know how fast you're going.
Somebody said that some of the scooters have speedometers. I've ridden Bird. I haven't seen one.
Okay. Going to maybe require them to shut down operation at a certain time of day or night?
Yes.
Because why? Because there's no lights on them?
If you're riding a scooter at 2 in the morning, you might probably be coming home from the bars. So we want to make sure that people are safe. It's dark out. And so the discussion is that they would be disabled at 9 p.m.
Have there been problems with riding these things in the dark after you're a little inebriated? Have there been problems with speed? Have people been hurt either riding the scooters or car accidents or pedestrian accidents?
Yeah, there have been. And I was out actually in San Diego over Christmas, and two people were killed in one night.
On scooters?
Mm-hmm, 2 a.m. and 3 a.m. Two separate incidents. They were both inebriated.
Because I've noticed that these scooters now have, some of them have lights under them.
Like they do.
LED lights under them to light their, I guess, make them noticeable. You're also considering getting them off the sidewalks, if I'm not mistaken. And when you get them off the sidewalks and reduce the speed, Councilman Larkin Eggleston says he's a little worried about that because that will increase the disparity between what the scooter can do and what a car can do. Mm-hmm. What do you think?
They'll be banned in high pedestrian areas, and the only one that's been identified is like College, Tryon, Stonewall to 7th Street. That's the proposal right now, with staff having the right to ban other high pedestrian areas. But right now they can be on sidewalks.
And you mentioned that the primary ridership are people who make $25,000 a year or less. Is that?
That's the largest population of users, yeah. But they're all across the spectrum.
Right.
But that is a very high population of users.
Is that why you are also considering requiring scooter companies to place 20% of their inventory every morning at the mm-hmm. beginning of the day in low-income neighborhoods?
Yes.
So these actually become a transportation alternative for people who do not have access to cars.
That's right. Yeah, that's what we're finding is really popular.
Does that if you do that? I don't. How many scooters are there in town? 400.
400, I believe.
So if you put 20% of 400 in that, that's 80
mm-hmm.
scooters. How would and you put them in low income areas where they're using them to get, I guess, downtown or wherever they go to mm-hmm. work. What does that do to traffic flow? Is that going to cause more problems because you've concentrated? Well, of course, they're concentrated right now downtown.
They're using them now, though, in those areas. We have heat maps to show where they're being used. And there's a high concentration just north of uptown.
Okay. Raleigh charges $300 per scooter to scooter companies.
Yeah.
We don't charge anything.
Right.
Why and how likely are we to begin charging these companies? And I know that in places where cities have begun charging for scooters. Some scooter companies have doubled the price,
which
I think is gouging to make up for the $300, which is nothing.
Yeah.
300 rides.
Well, I think what we're looking at is a dynamic pricing model. So we are looking at a fee that actually could be reduced if the scooter company gets people to wear a helmet, gets them to park it in the right place. So as an incentive, charge a fee and then have an incentive to be able to lower the fee if they get people to use these things safely. $300 concerns me because the state only allows cities to charge $30 per automobile. So, and that's a tax. And so it's conceivable that the state could say, that's a tax. And so I think
it is a tax.
Right. But we don't have the authority to charge that as a tax. So it's a fee. I think that if we charge something reasonable to offset the costs of running scooters on our public streets that the public pays for, then, you know, we probably have a better chance of keeping them.
Do any of these vehicles, scooters or bicycles, have to be inspected on a regular basis for safety conditions?
Oh, that's a good question. I don't think that they do.
Okay.
Now, I don't know that there's as much that can go wrong as with, like, an automobile. That's, you know, you really have to get your emissions. There they go.
Yeah.
Emissions tested.
Yeah. The scooters are descending on our window. They're not happy with this conversation. You're going to make this decision on Monday night. Is that right? Or are you going to continue talking or actually
I think we
voting?
Need to continue talking about it. I would like to – there's several options in this ordinance, and it might be we have to sort of vote piecemeal on these things.
Well, Regina on Facebook writes, leave scooters alone, ! Good grief, ! So you have her input.
Let's see if a pedestrian's out there that wants to win. And the other issue is that it'll be a dynamic number in terms of how many. We're not capping The scooters were saying that if a company shows more usage, they can add another 50. If they show that they're not being used, they have to reduce them. So that'll be dynamic, too.
Let's talk about something else that's kind of surprising, and I don't even know how to react to this, but for 6 years we have been building out this thing called the Cross Charlotte Trail. It's a series of walking and bike trails that was designed to run for 26 miles through the city and connect all these different areas of the city together. And now, after 6 years of construction, we have discovered we're a little short on cash to the tune of $77 million. Mm-hmm. How can that be that we're just now discovering we're short $77 million?
That's exactly what council members are asking. That we first learned about that on Monday, and we need more answers on how that came about and how that was calculated in the first place and how they got it so wrong.
The original budget for this project is $38 million,
right.
And now we're $77 million short. That means they under-budgeted by two-thirds, right? Am I doing the math right?
I don't know, because I don't know how the math was done. And I'd like to know how the math was done and how you can talk, because that was done in 2012, and now we're in 2019.
Right.
And a lot of that is land acquisition. So I have questions like, how do you make an estimate like that in 2012 without everybody running up and buying up the land that's on either side of that trail, knowing that the city's going to have to buy it? So, there's a lot of questions.
Is that what
there?
Happened? Because Charlotte City staff says the shortfall is because of costs that are significantly higher than when the project was originally estimated, which seems to me to be always the case.
It's always, yeah.
No matter what you build, if it's going to take years to build, it's going to get more expensive as the years go on, and you build that into your calculations, into your estimate. So are you saying that developers, property owners, knew that this thing was coming, so they developed and raised the prices of it so it was more expensive to buy the land you need for the
I don't know that. I'm just saying it's the same with affordable housing, right? If we say we're going to run the light rail out that way, if we don't get proactive and buy the land value goes up.
This is why Walt Disney, when he built Disney World, came in with a bunch of different companies that didn't have the name Disney in them and bought up all this land, so nobody knew what was going to happen.
But government's
different.
That's
why he did it that way.
Government's different. We have to tell everybody what we're going to do and then ask for a bond to do it. And so you've got a much longer time frame that you can actually say, now we're going to go ahead and do it. We can't come in and secretly buy land with taxpayer money. So, but to your point, the construction costs also, we are being told that's the problem. I don't think we have all the answers yet. We want the answers. We made a commitment to build this trail, and I think we need to honor it.
Well, you may not have the answers, but I have some more questions.
Okay.
So we'll come back and talk about that, and we'll talk about affordable housing, and we'll talk about the federal government shutdown. I want to see what effect that's having on us, if any. It's Charlotte Talks with Mayor Pro Tem Julie Eiselt on WFAE.
If you've ever thought to yourself, I should make a podcast, now is your chance. WFAE is proud to present the Queen City PodQuest, the search for the next great podcast from Charlotte and the surrounding areas. Learn more and submit your idea by January 27th at wfae.org/Queen City PodQuest.
It's Charlotte Talks on WFAE and WFHE. I'm Mike Collins. Mayor Pro Tem Julie Eiselt is here doing an bang-up job filling in for Mayor Vi Lyles, who joins us usually once a month on this program, but she was called away for official duties somewhere else. Let's talk a little bit more, not much more, but a little bit more about this Cross Charlotte Trail, because it was a revelation to council and to the rest of us that the project is $77 million short and was only budgeted at $38 million several years ago, back in 2012. And we're nearing where we should be at the end of this project, and we can't finish it. WFAE and the Charlotte Observer are both reporting that this shortfall leaves the future of the project in doubt. If you agree with that, does that mean the future of the project as originally conceived, or something that doesn't even come close to what we started to do is going to be in doubt? Or we'll just stop where we are now, and that'll be the end of it.
No. We made a commitment to build this trail. And one thing that we have asked the manager is, where can that money come from? Can it come from CDOT? Can it come from tourism revenue? The High Line in New York is a tourism attraction.
Right.
And so we got to get creative and figure out how to get this done. We made a commitment to get it done, and that's what we have to do.
City Manager Marcus Jones, who was not here
Right.
When this was planned and budgeted for, says the estimates that were there at the beginning had not accounted for how much more expensive it was going to be to build the trail in areas that are already developed. Is this a project of the planning department, or is this something else, some other entity within the city that is responsible for this? Because I know we were without a planning director for eons.
I'm not even sure that's the issue. The issue is how these things get calculated. Mm-hmm. You know, who's doing these formulas and how do they come up with them?
Right.
To me, that's the issue, and that's what we have to figure out. Marcus came in when he came in as city manager and saw that we were piecemealing these projects. And so he's come up with a 10-year capital spend projection, which apparently we didn't have before, for complete projects. And that, just coming from the banking industry, it stuns me a little bit that we would have done anything piecemeal like that and talked about it in current dollars. So,
okay. So how much has been built and what is left to do? This is supposed to be 26 miles long. So where are we today and how much more do we need for the $77 million we have to scrounge around for?
So we can complete half of it. We've got three projects that are shovel-ready that will connect segments that have been built but aren't connected. Mm-hmm. And those are ready to go. And that'll complete half of the trail. That'll complete 18 miles of the trail. And I think we should do that.
So are we going to find the $77 million? Are we going to have a bond issue to raise $77 million to fix it? But you've said we're going to finish it. How?
Well, they have to find the money to finish it.
Well, that's what I'm asking. Where's it coming from?
And those are questions that we still have. I've been on the phone with the manager, as have other council members. We don't even know if 77 is, you know, how did they get that number? So I want to know the methodology that they even came up with that number by, and what, you know, have you really looked at other options? They're talking about giving, involving developers who do build, and we've seen rezonings that come before us on the Greenway, where they are being asked to give that property to the Greenway as a part of their rezoning. So those are options, but we need more information before we proclaim that this isn't going to get built, or that I think the last thing we would want to do is say we're going to go back it out to the people and ask for more money.
So we have an interesting and provocative Twitter comment that to conclude this line of questioning. Last month, they say, the mayor and council praised the transparency in the city budget. Given the surprise shortfall for funding of the Cross Charlotte Trail, are you worried about the solvency of other key projects?
That is something the manager has been working on for 2 years, which is how this came about. I have not heard that there's other key projects that, I mean, this was a big project. This was a big one. But yes, I would say we have to go back and say, are we being as transparent as we thought we were?
Why isn't this a park project, a county project? Because the county runs the parks, right?
Right. We're looking at this as a mobility. So the county has greenways all over the city, but they weren't connected. So we identified two pretty key greenways, Irwin Greenway, and Sugar Creek, but two major ones. Okay. And then we saw that if we connected that through this 26-mile, it's not a trail. It's a parkway that people can ride bikes on,
right,
that they can actually get into uptown on. Mm-hmm. We realized that this is another mobility option for people to get to work, to get around town. So we're including it as part of our mobility plan.
Can you ride scooters on them?
Not yet.
And I ask you because, let's see here, we have two final questions on scooters from people who have been listening. Nakisa on Facebook, would the city be open to a private company, not police or cats, enforcing scooter safety? I feel an entrepreneur on the other end of this.
Right. I'd like to know the plan for enforcement. I've asked that Monday night. I asked that question, so I want to see what the enforcement plan is in the first place before we go down that road.
And Jonathan on Twitter, the city council needs to consider the ever-increasing parking prices in Uptown before adding regulations to restrict scooters. Some lots are up 70% in 6 months. Not sustainable, he says.
So they won't be prohibited from being in Uptown. They'll be prohibited from being on the sidewalks. But those sidewalks, those roads have bike lanes. It's a very small area where they can't be on the sidewalk. They have to be in the road. And typically, like North Tryon, you rarely get somebody going that fast in North Tryon. They're going to have to ride in the road.
Let's switch gears here. A former New York City mayor, possible presidential candidate Michael Bloomberg, was in town just around the holidays to disclose that Bloomberg Philanthropies had selected Charlotte as one of 20 cities participating in a campaign to accelerate environmental initiatives. We're the 19th of the 20 cities to be chosen. It's a two-year, $70 million program. There's your $70 million right there.
Bloomberg might agree that this is an environmentally friendly project.
Well, we applied to be part of this. We got it. Why were we chosen, and what will we do with that $70 million?
So we were chosen because we had a really good plan. He came to Charlotte to announce that. He didn't go to all 20 cities, to my knowledge. So he really liked what we were proposing. His organization will be providing technical assistance on implementation of policies to further basically the Paris Initiative. So that is essentially what he's going to be doing. Our staff worked really hard on this.
So how will we spend it? Where's the money going to go? Do we know yet?
Mostly on technical assistance.
Okay.
They're going to facilitate the development of passage of high-impact policies. They're going to be collecting data, helping us collect data so that we can use that for the design of different plans, of different programs that are really focused on lowering emissions and, again, really going after the goals of the Paris Agreement.
Okay. The federal government remains in shutdown. Tomorrow will be the paycheck day, and paychecks will not be issued. We're in the third week, I think, of this, and it is having a trickle-down effect in a lot of cities across the country, because it isn't just the 800,000-plus federal employees who are out. When they're not there, they're not eating lunch in the nearby restaurants. They're not using transit. They're not using the dry cleaners next to their business, et cetera. So it's causing problems. And obviously, if you don't get paid, you can't pay your bills. So are we feeling it? Are we likely to feel it here in Charlotte?
So tomorrow, the TSA doesn't get paid.
Yeah.
That I talked to our airport director yesterday, and he said, a lot of those folks get paid $15 an hour. So that hurts.
Yeah.
They are not allowed to supplement their pay. The airport is not. And so they've done things like they've had their employees bring in food and donations of food for TSA employees, anything that can help offset some of their bills, like their grocery bill. It's going to be painful when those folks don't get paid tomorrow. And I think that's when we're probably going to start seeing and hearing more about this. Some cities have asked landlords not to penalize people if they can't pay their rent, not to evict them.
Yeah.
But a lot of these folks are on hourly wages.
And some of these people will not get back pay. When the government resumes operations, I'm told that some of these folks will not get back pay, even though they're working. Mm-hmm. As this goes on, some cities, I think Washington among them, is doing the government's job for them. They are picking up the trash at federal installations, although I don't know why there would be trash in a closed building, but they're picking up the trash, and they're keeping a running tally, and they plan to bill the federal government when they get back in business for the running tally of doing their work for them. Does Mecklenburg County, does Charlotte, does North Carolina, are we involved in any of that? Do you see a need to be involved in any of that?
Well, I think, isn't the mall in Washington, isn't that a national park?
Yeah.
So I think that's where a lot of the trash is. So mostly it's happening in the national parks.
Okay.
So I don't know that we're not impacted by that here in Charlotte.
Okay. So I guess we'll have to keep an eye on this, because it does affect TIA.
TSA.
TSA, and it also affects the food stamp program.
Yes, although they said that they're not going to hold those food stamps back. Okay. But we have the Federal Reserve here.
Right.
So we have employees here that it's going to impact, especially when they don't get paid.
So we mentioned the loss of the CIAA tournament, and Pamela on Facebook says, I think we lost the tournament because of the gentrification that is going on in Charlotte. I don't know whether that's true. But Michael emails, Baltimore is a great city for hosting sporting events. In the years I've attended the Army-Navy game, I never saw any type of surcharge, and hotel rooms within walking distance that were more reasonably priced than those here. But we lost the tournament. We kind of knew it was coming. We also were unable to lure Amazon to town. among some of the disappointments of 2018. But in December, it was announced that Avid Exchange's Charlotte headquarters will include the addition of over 1,200 new jobs. Fortune 500 technology company Cognizant is expanding their Charlotte operations by 300 jobs. And, of course, Honeywell is relocating its headquarters here. All three of these wins, of course, include incentives from Charlotte and from the state. Avid Exchange will get, I think, $3.3 million from the city and the county, plus $1.7 million in community college training. Cognizant is getting $2 million from the state, more from the county. Honeywell will get $17.1 million over 15 years. But at least
Funding Tree is adding over 400 jobs.
Okay, and at least with that Honeywell vote, the incentive vote, one council member, Republican Ed Driggs, voted no. He's one of two Republicans on council, and they are the party of business, and he voted no for incentives for a business. Why?
Ed, it's more about process. He felt like we needed to be given more information, and I understand that. He's not against giving incentives to Honeywell. It's the way it was presented. He wants more detail and more information. But when these incentives, from the city's standpoint and the county, they've got to be here, and they've got to hire those people, and they have to pay those taxes, then they get some of that back. It isn't money out the door from taxpayers. So it's tax money that comes here because they're here and then goes to them. But we do need to know more about how that's calculated. I think that's really what Ed is asking, is for that information sooner. It's a little difficult because the sooner you give it to people, the sooner it leaks out.
Right. But to be clear, because a lot of people don't like incentives and they don't think that they're fair, and they say, well, you want to give an incentive to a major, 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 major company, why can't I get one for my house?
Yeah.
But what you're saying is because there's a quid pro quo here.
Right.
They're coming here. They're bringing jobs. These jobs are pretty well paying in the case of Honeywell.
Right.
And they have to be here for the time that they said they were going to be here.
Right.
And they have to pay their taxes. And then if they pay their taxes and live up to their end of the agreement, the city lives up to their side.
Correct. And it's
after
always
the fact.
It's they're going to pay more than what they're getting back. So there's a net increase. If you're just getting a rebate on your house, there's not a net benefit to the city.
Because I know Tariq Bakari said that one of these deals that we talked about here, and I've forgotten which one, was a deal he would do any day of the week because we're going to make out like bandits.
Oh, well, wouldn't have been the words I would have chosen.
Homicides. Let's talk about that because you've talked about this in the past. Homicides in Charlotte were down slightly last year over the previous several years. But so far this year, we have had more than our fair share of homicides. So we ended the year with a little hope, which seems to have quickly abated. What's your take on this?
You know, it's a hard issue because in Charlotte, it seems to be so random. It's not like you go to Chicago and they're mostly happening on the south side or, you know, in certain neighborhoods. When we looked at the 2018 data, it's all over the city. The police department's working very hard on it. Any homicide, you know, I don't like to look at it as data so much because any singular homicide is terrible. It's affecting someone's life. It's ripping apart a family. Any homicide is bad, and that's what we have to focus on. So, you know, the ones this year, it came out of the box, came out of the gates with homicides. It's really disturbing and it's upsetting. It doesn't necessarily indicate a trend.
Okay. I want to go back to the government shutdown.
Mm-hmm.
You're a Democrat.
Uh-huh. Oh, man. I thought we were going to talk about city stuff.
Well, I mean, you're a Democrat. Where do you come down on this in terms of what should happen? I mean, we had this meeting at the White House that lasted 32 seconds yesterday where the president walked out of the room because Nancy Pelosi said she's not going to give him his wall, period. We got nothing to discuss. Both sides say the other side is being obstructive and won't move and won't negotiate. What's your take on it?
I think there's a lot of petulant children in Washington that have to get together and figure this out for the sake of the people, like TSA workers who are hurting.
I'll let you off the hook with that. Charlotte has hired a new city attorney to replace longtime Bob Hageman, our city attorney Bob Hageman, who retired. We hired city attorney from Durham, Patrick Baker. They say really nice things about him in Durham as he's walking out the door. He's a North Carolina native who has lived all of his life here, worked most of his life in that part of the state, but he decided at the age of 51 he had one more career move left in him. So why did Charlotte choose Patrick Baker over I would imagine there were other candidates. And when does he start? And you have 30 seconds.
He starts, I think, in March, in okay. 2 months. He's fantastic. Durham has had a lot of experiences that Charlotte has. So not only is it a city that experiences situations that we have, he's got all that experience that Bob had. He's almost as old as Bob. He's had as much experience, and he's going to be a great addition to Charlotte. We're excited for him to come.
All right. Charlotte Mayor Pro Tem Julie Iselt filled in today for Vi Lyles. Tell her to watch over her shoulders. Thanks for the hour. Charlotte Talks is sponsored by Mazda of South Charlotte, dedicated to helping customers select vehicles that fit one's lifestyle. More at MazdaofSouthCharlotte.com.